Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and it is late September. Much of the recruiting crush has finished for the class of 2027, and the fall ball and fall lacrosse action has yet to get underway, which means that it's the perfect time to have some far-reaching, far-ranging conversations that I tend to enjoy the most. And we're going to begin by talking about Harlem Lacrosse with CEO Mike Levin and new strategic advisor Mike Murphy, former Penn lacrosse coach. We're going to talk about what's going on within the organization, as well as what Murph's role is going to be and why it's such a good time for the program to utilize the benefits of his expertise. So first and foremost, thanks guys for joining.
Thanks for having us.
It's always a little difficult to have a conversation with two guys with the same first name. So Murph, I hope you're going to be okay by going as Murph in this conversation. But let's start with you. You know, obviously, your more than decade long tenure at Penn came to an end over the summer, and now this is the first that we've heard about what you're targeting in terms of what's next for you and your career. What's the last few months been like, and what ultimately led to your decision to join Harlem?
Yeah, thanks, Terry. The summer, it was about wrapping up some loose ends at Penn and starting to spend some more time with my family and then starting to figure out what was next and have been, you know, supportive of Harlem Lacrosse. I'm on the Philadelphia board, have done some stuff with them through Penn for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years post-COVID. And just been a friend of the organization for a long time, going back 10 or 12 years. And so, you know, Mike and I have had a couple of conversations and those things got a little bit more serious and felt like there was an opportunity for me to spend some more time in the organization, you know, working with Mike and the others to try to advance, you know, their mission and support the organization in any way I can. So excited to be a part of it.
So, Mike Levin, for those listening that are unfamiliar, and I can't imagine that there are that many, but let's be gracious to those who are. Can you just give a little bit of a background on your lacrosse and Harlem lacrosse career, and then a little bit of a rundown of Harlem Lacrosse as an organization, when it was founded, what its mission is, how many markets it's in, and the like?
Yeah, so my background was I'm from upstate New York. I played lacrosse at Brown, had a great experience there, played some MLL afterwards, and was really like focused on coaching and teaching. So I spent 1 year coaching at Holy Cross, and I went back to school to get my master's at BC in education, coached the club team there, and was really intent on becoming a public school teacher in an urban public school. I was about to take a job working in Boston Public Schools, and I came across this nonprofit called Metro Lacrosse, and I applied to be a volunteer on their website, and they said they had a job opening. That was in November of 2007, so almost 20 years ago, and that's how long I've been at this game. And so I worked there for a while, which was a great experience. Then I eventually moved to California, started a new organization called City Lacrosse in 2014, and then Harlem gave me a call a couple of years in. It was like, hey, do you want to be join us? And I said, no, we were kind of settled in LA. We were about to have our first child. But we ended up merging and became, Harlem was kind of at that time in the midst of going to five cities. And we became the fifth in LA, here in Compton. And I was helped join the team in January 1st of 2017, at which point we had about 15 employees and I think about 300 kids in the program. And was getting going in other cities, sort of had been in Philly, or we're about to go to Philly, had been in Baltimore for a year, we're just starting up in Boston, and then we became the fifth. So it was really an exercise in like, can we scale this model? And to speak what the model is, it was started in 2008 by the founder, Simon Cataldo, who's a Teach for America core member, struggling to kind of make progress with special education math students. And he decided to start offering them lacrosse. Had really good results. The kids did really well. And so then he sort of turned that into its own nonprofit. And the premise is really like embed a full-time employee who's not a teacher in the school to do what we now call academic coaching during the school day, every day, beginning of the school to the end of the school year, or beginning of the school year to the end of the school year. to really link the experience that they're having athletically to their academic performance. So it's an academic intervention that hinges on participation in lacrosse. It's really not about growing the game. It's really about helping kids become the best students that they can and achieve the things that they want in their life. So over time, we've grown. It's now in 5 cities. There are 40 people who have that job, program director, across the 5 cities. We serve kids in grades 6 through 12. And so part of growing the organization in that way has meant that we now are sort of servicing kids who are older. And so we have things like a national club program that allows kids to pursue college lacrosse if that they have the interest and aptitude to do so, which is about half our seniors right now. For the last several classes, and a full-scale college counseling office, which does things like financial aid, college lists, helping kids find opportunity programs at a super wide range of schools. So whether that's a 2-year school or super elite schools, like in last year's class, we had a student go to Cornell, and you know, we've had kids go to many like Ivies and NESCAC. So we're servicing kids for whom that's the right fit, and kids who are looking at state schools or 2-year schools or even some trade schools. So it's kind of become a full service intervention from grade 6 through 12, with the goal of helping kids really like maximize their post-secondary opportunities.
And that's a great jumping off point for, I think, where this conversation goes next, because I think you summarized how I conceptualized Harlem lacrosse really as a tool for academic success. And I think that it's understandable how, as you invest more time and energy, and that time manifests in a greater duration of time, where all of a sudden you have a lacrosse player who's learning how to play when he's in sixth grade as opposed to in 11th grade, the likelihood that he's or she is qualified to, you know, play college lacrosse is just greater. And what's interesting in terms of how this continues to manifest is that need that you talked about when it comes to, you know, higher level coaching or advocacy for college placement. So how do you just describe how that need has been over the last couple of years, and how that ultimately led to this opportunity to, you know, bring Murph on in a greater role?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a bunch of kids have great opportunities for a long time at Harlem Lacrosse, you know, dating back to our first senior classes, which had, you know, 2 kids in it. But the senior classes have really grown as our not emphasis on lacrosse, not really about lacrosse, but we do prioritize lacrosse instruction at a young age because we feel it's a really important driver of long-term retention. For kids to get the most they can out of the program, they don't have to be great lacrosse players, but they should be getting better every day. And so if you work at Harlem Lacrosse, that's part of what your objectives are. And so as a result of those things, plus the greater volume of students, you just have a lot more kids for whom college lacrosse is a realistic possibility. And it's been very consistent, about 50% of graduating classes for the last 6 or 7 years, but those classes have gone from 30, 40 students. The last several have been 50 to 60. Last year's class was 100 students. This current senior class, the 26s, is 153 students. So it's just a lot more kids. If you say 50% are going to be playing college lacrosse, and there's a pretty big range of outcomes there, just like I was saying on the academic side, where you have Division I scholarship athletes, and you have club players, and you have kids going to HBCUs, and you have kids going to NESCAC schools or other Division III schools, kind of like the full range of college lacrosse experiences that exist, we are trying to support as potential outcomes for our kids.
And Murph, you know, one of the places that I'm interested in starting is less about specifically getting involved with Harlem lacrosse instruction and more so just the shift of coaching college age athletes at the highest level, be it at Haverford or more recently at Penn, to coaching players that are still going through that kind of developmental phase that might include learning how to play. I saw you over the summer and you were coaching one of your son's team. He's a 2028, so obviously you've already dabbled with that you know, over the course of the last couple months. How do you describe the transition and the shift? What has to change in your mind about how you approach it?
Yeah, I'm really excited about it, Terry, for a lot of reasons. It will take me back to a more fundamental level of skill development. And honestly, like, you know, I was involved in our town with the youth program. And I remember we had a meeting with the high school coach and a couple of fathers that had played in college. And we said, all right, our goals for this are simply to teach the fundamentals and encourage these kids to love lacrosse. And that was it. And so if I can get in touch with some middle school kids and interact with them and, you know, teach them to love the game and, you know, teach them to respect the game and hopefully teach them some skills that will allow them to improve and come back tomorrow and do that again, that builds on itself. And just to be a part of that is, you know, very exciting to me. And because it's part of it's lacrosse, but it's also for me, the opportunity to give back to the sport I love, but it's also an opportunity to improve the sport I love because of what Harlem does and how they do it.
So I want to take the opportunity to get a little lacrosse nerdy here just because I'm fascinated by it. One of the things about Harlem lacrosse's development that is just an anecdote that I really like to bounce off of people is this notion that a lot of the practicing and the skill development took place in the handball courts in Harlem and in New York City. And that was a, I mean, to use a commonly used expression, a constraint-led approach. It was a constraint, right? That was like, we didn't have fields, so this is the space that we had, and we used it. And then, you know, came to realize that it actually might be an asset. It might be an advantage because tighter quarters, better stick protection, faster decision-making, and everything goes along with that. I guess, how do you describe that element of just the need to innovate or the need to intuit based on the individual circumstances of you know, what you're going to be able to work with?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the more intriguing parts of this is figuring out a way to do that. And for me, honestly, the biggest challenge is the scale at which Harlem operates. I'm used to, you know, 50 higher level players that are, you know, 18 to 23 years old. And now we're talking about 10 times that in different cities. And I think another part of my responsibilities here is to coach the coaches and helping them to develop and evolve and things like that. And it's funny, the two people I'll mention, Joel Sensor is one who I coached at Haverford and, you know, wrote a recommendation for him to come to Harlem. And then about 8 or 9 years ago, I did a practice session with him in one of those handball courts in New York. And it was so exciting and so cool to kind of be a part of that. And so he gets a lot of credit for, you know, pushing this thing from, you know, one city to multiple cities. And he's the one that gets a lot of these kids into college now. And then there's a woman named Jenny Moe who does a terrific job of overseeing the lacrosse parts of this. So as I better understand her challenges, I'm hopeful that I can kind of plug in and figure out better ways for us to go about what we're doing here at Harlem, whether it be a handball court or figuring out ways to get these kids together, you know, coaching the coaches, creating more standards for these kids to hit and things like that, because it's not about the best player. It's about all the players, and it's about them understanding that, you know, if they put the time in, like anything else in your life, if you work at it, you're going to get better. And if you continue to get better, you'll have success that can take you somewhere.
Mike, I was planning on bringing this up later, but Murph teed it up perfectly, which is the annual fundraiser for Harlem Lacrosse is scheduled for October 22nd, and you'll be honoring Joel Sensor. And for those that haven't read his work on Inside Lacrosse or at USA Lacrosse, he's not just a player at Haverford and also an incredibly significant force in the expansion and development of Harlem Lacrosse. He's written a lot. He loves to put his thoughts on the page when it comes to the sport. What has Joel Sensor meant to Harlem Lacrosse? Oh, I should mention, because I skipped over this, he's being honored at that fundraiser, and that was why it's an appropriate opportunity to bring him up.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I mean, it's and also a little bit unique, and I think really appropriate. You know, we typically have honored people who have done a lot for the organization in terms of like advocacy and financially, people who have made it possible for us to exist, and like appropriately so. We love honoring those people. You know, and they deserve to be recognized. It's important for society, I think, to highlight the people who take some of their wealth and try to make the world a better place. That's very important. But that's not, I mean, Joel has indirectly, only in the financial sacrifices he's made by working at Harlem Lacrosse for so many years, and advocating for other people to get involved. But I mean, there's no one, it's the level of dedication that is just like so uncommon, I think, not just here, but anywhere. Like of anyone I've met, of any endeavor I've ever been a part of, whether it's a team or a work environment or anything, just like the level of commitment that Joel has had over the long haul and like stamina at this point is just, it's so, so unique. And he's a really smart guy who could have lots of opportunities, you know, and he to do lots of things. And this is really important to him because the work is very important to him, and the nature of the relationships that he develops with our students and families is just like, it's sort of like symbolizes what Harlem Lacrosse is all about. It's sort of like get to know a kid because of the sport and care deeply about that kid to help their future. And that is, nobody really sort of like symbolizes that more than Joel. And I'm just so like, over the long haul, it's just so hard to sort of like articulate that doing that for so long is really hard. And like the hours and stuff that he worked, if you've been around him, you see it. And it's so cool now to have built it to this point where it's like so many kids are going to college, and that's the area of the work that he really focuses on, and it's just like really come to fruition. It's just a great opportunity to celebrate everything that he's built to get it to that point. I did want to highlight one quick thing. I'm sorry to go off of Joel, but that Mike said about it's, you know, it's not about the best kids, it's about every kid. I think it's a really important point, and you're talking about where Harlem Lacrosse is, like, you know, the college lacrosse has changed a lot, college sports have changed a lot, and youth sports have changed a lot. But, you know, most youth sports are, especially lacrosse, but lots of them are like this, and it's not really the fault of anyone in particular, but sort of like, they're much more oriented towards the kids who are likely to be college lacrosse players at an extremely young age. So it's really about like concentrating the resources, more time, more coaching, more tournaments for the kids who demonstrate that they have the potential to be very good over the long haul, and potentially invest a lot of money in that as well, because it's all provided by the private industry. And it comes at the expense of everyone else, really. You know, it's like most, that's why the sport is not, in my opinion, is not growing as much as it could, is because we don't think about the flip side of that coin, that other, you know, by doing that, we're telling other kids, okay, it's not for you. It's only for you if you're probably going to play college lacrosse and you want to play every weekend and you can pay a lot of money and you're very good when you're young. And that's not everyone. And that's not everyone who could benefit from the sport of lacrosse. And that's like really fundamental to what we believe at Harlem Lacrosse. And so thinking about coaching and training the coaches and leveling up lacrosse is kind of a different challenge. It's not about having the most elite team. If we wanted to have the most elite team, we would tell all the kids who don't show promise in sixth grade to stop playing. And then we would take the best kids and put them on one team and play against the best teams and give them the best coaching. That is antithetical to the values that we hold at Harlem Lacrosse. And so it's sort of a different challenge. How can we meet the needs of kids who do have the aptitude and interest to play college lacrosse while simultaneously encouraging other kids who may be a good JV lacrosse player in high school to stay with the program long enough to get the other benefit? And that's, I think, a worthy challenge.
Well, and I think you're better suited to address how you've done it so far than anybody else, which is how have you coached the coaches? And how do you want Murph to be involved in elevating the way that you coach the coaches?
You know, you brought up an interesting point about the kind of the constraints as an asset, you know, and I think it's really about managing all the variables that go into like periods of lacrosse instruction. So like, you know, how much space you have and how many children you have and how many lacrosse balls you have and the skill level and other challenges that the kids might have. You know, have they been exposed to trauma? Do they have experience with youth sports? Are there other things going on in their lives that's making it hard to do something after school? Their parents have a second job, whatever the case may be. How are you sort of like managing all those variables to result in like the most productive instructional period? And this is the work that Jenny does, and she's really, I think, done an amazing job of trying to boil it down to sort of like key strategic factors and sort of like instructional practices that we think lead to those things. So, you know, I was looking at something yesterday for our training we have coming up for the team. Like one of the lines in it is curious, not furious. So it's like if you're having behavior problems with a kid, okay, are you responding by being furious? Like, okay, this is defiance. This kid's not doing what I'm telling you, which is sort of a traditional sports approach, like get in line. Or are you approaching with curiosity? Like what's going on in this kid's life that's making it hard for he or she to pay attention or follow directions or not cause trouble at the end of line or get their stuff on or get to practice on time? And that's a subtle shift, but it's an important one. And that allows you to engage the kids that might otherwise be forced away from the sport. I think another thing is thinking about like instructional techniques and like scaffolding. So like, you know, Mike's talking about, okay, I'm gonna have to get back to fundamentals. And you're like, hey, yeah, if you're trying to beat Princeton in lacrosse in your Penn, okay, there's certain fundamental exercises that the kids have to have good stick work. They have to understand principles and stuff, but it's, you're spending a lot of time on like team concepts, you know, like, and for, whereas at Harlem lacrosse, you might be thinking about like something as fundamental as what does it mean to follow directions or what does it mean to try hard? And then it's sort of like, okay, cradling. Okay, like it's things that you take for granted sometimes when you are coaching at a higher level. You're like, how do you learn how to cradle? And when it comes to scaffolding, how can I build in a series of supports that I can then take away that'll meet every kid where they are and allow them to develop the skill? So like, you know, you'll see a Harlem lacrosse coach do a shooting drill and like they might, especially in young kids, they might place the ball in the kid's stick already sort of like ready to go and shoot it. So that's one level of activity. And then another kid, they might be tossing them the ball, you know, or another kid might be dodging and going into the shot. So it's like, okay, are you scaffolding the instruction so that kids can do it? And that's, you know, just kind of, it's, Jenny's background is as an educator. It's really like a, these are principles of like what it means to be an educator, but can you apply scaffolding or things like curious, not furious? That's kind of like some of the ways that we do it. It's, we try to be pretty comprehensive, but that hopefully gives you a little insight.
Yeah, totally. Murph, pivot the conversation a little bit, because one of the elements of this that we haven't addressed yet is just the organizational development. I mean, obviously, to some extent, we did when we're talking about the fundraiser. But, you know, for all that you bring to the table on the lacrosse side, you also, to your point, you know, managed a really high performing organization of you know, 50 some 18 to 23 year olds, as well as your assistants, your support staff, and were a part of a larger organization. How do you intend to approach that aspect of the opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of my title and job description is it's fairly flexible. And so wherever Mike and you know, the leadership needs me, I've got a lot of experience. Mike and I have talked a lot about some of that, you know, organizational dynamics, some fundraising, you know, coaching coaches, things like that. And so I think it's going to evolve. We talked about that, you know, my role in September is going to be a little different than what it's going to look like in December. And then when we get to the spring and then the summer, and when we get into June and July, then the activity with that national team will ramp up. So I think it's, you know, I don't think we have anything too set in stone. I have a lot of different experiences and things that I've done that I think can be helpful. But, you know, I would say at the same time, I'm pretty excited to learn from these guys too. You know, Jenny, you know, she probably has a better way of designing stick drills than I have for these young kids. And same with Mike with fundraising and some other things. So I think it's going to be some give and take, and I think it's going to evolve here as the weeks and months go on.
Mike mentioned that the landscape has changed dramatically, meaning, you know, whether it's the nature of youth sports when it comes to the finances or the nature of recruiting or certainly the nature of college sports. And that's, you know, different depending on the level that you're talking about. How do you regard this opportunity for these young kids, especially the ones, and I want to get into this more specifically in a second, but the ones who now come in with the aspiration and know what the opportunity looks like, maybe have a sense for what the commitment level is required, and how do you feel like you can best serve them in terms of guiding them on their lacrosse journey?
Yeah, I'm very excited about that part of it. And again, I've had some interactions. I was fortunate enough to be involved with one kid's journey from New York to Division I lacrosse as a freshman now playing college lacrosse, was trading texts with him and Joel over the weekend. And so that's the easy part, honestly. I think that's going to be fun, and I think it's going to be rewarding. And just helping those guys navigate this through the infrastructure that Harlem has set up, you know, I can roll my sleeves up and attack that. But I think for me, like, you know, I didn't find lacrosse until seventh grade. I moved to New Canaan. One of the first people I met was Andy Towers, you know, and so, all right. So I liked lacrosse pretty quickly as soon as I met him. And so I want to be that for some of these kids, you know, if I can, you know, because for some of these kids, they're going to be on the fence and they have attrition. You know, kids don't always play it and fall in love the way I did. And so if we can, you know, if I like I, you know, the Radnor youth experience, if I can teach some of these kids to love lacrosse, and I think one of the things that's as important, and I think it's probably the case in these schools more so than in the schools that are, you know, feeding the colleges, is that the why. And I think at some point 15 or 20 years ago, the reason kids were playing was to get to X, Y, and Z. And the reason we played when I was young is I loved it. And at no point did I think about it getting me to high school or getting me to college or getting me anywhere. You know, I just wanted to go play. No matter, I would have played in a parking lot, you know, wherever. And so if we can bring some of that joy to these kids, and then all of a sudden the residual benefit is that they stay in school, they go to high school instead of going to work or worse, then I, you know, that to me is more exciting than the kids that already have the motivation. We'll perpetuate that and facilitate that. But I think if we can, you know, go from 150 kids going to college to 300 in the next couple of years and raise enough money to create the infrastructure to do that, then this will be a pretty exciting time at Harlem Lacrosse.
You touched a nerve there in terms of the transactional relationship with why you play. I don't know if this is the moment or the forum to have that conversation, but Mike, I do want to double down on the idea of faith versus seeing and what it has meant for the program to have alums go on to the success that now the kids 6, 7, 8 years younger than them are aspiring to. What have you seen in terms of the evolution and how has it affected Harlem?
Yeah, well, part of it is sort of related to what you were just talking about, like kids who already have the aspiration. I think like watching that transition has changed a little bit. Like I would say some of the early kids who experienced success at Harlem Lacrosse, like maybe had, like meaning they made it to college lacrosse, they may have had like other challenges in their life. They maybe weren't the best students, so the behavior wasn't great, but they really had like a strong athletic identity from the beginning. They were like, hey, I'm an athlete, and like this is the thing that I'm good at, and I get positive reinforcement for it. This is a place where I can shine. And so they were always going to like lean into that part, which was great. But I'd say over time, you see more kids who can come to that a little bit later, where they're like, okay, I'm going to do this. I like it. These people are very supportive. I like the culture of the program. I'm seeing some benefit. And then they're like, I might be able to take this a little farther, you know, like where I'm getting a little bit better at this and I'm seeing that there is opportunity. And like, then they're like, you know, they kind of get this, the light switch, maybe like in 9th, 10th, 11th grade, where they're like, okay, I'm going to change my level of commitment and really get like goal oriented. And I think part of that is seeing the pathways, like all the different pathways that exist. So you'll see kids like, oh, maybe I want a PG, or maybe I, because like lots of kids from Harlem Lacrosse can PG. And a lot of them are ones who, you know, use that to really like improve their transcripts and for the goal of playing college lacrosse. You know, kids who might otherwise not be able to play college lacrosse, but by virtue of PGing, they can. And the same, they might, by not PGing, they are not likely to go to college. So it's not just like I'm going to play college lacrosse, but I'm really changing my mindset from, is college something I'm even interested in, to now I'm going to take an extra year of high school just so I can go to college so I can also play college lacrosse, which was like, would have been less common, I think, back then. And I think it's like, I mean, if you watch this year, you'll see like, we got lots of great girl, women's lacrosse players in college, and like, they're starting to, I think, make a bigger impact. There's two twins, Zareen and Zareen, who play at Albany, and they, you know, one had a knee injury last year, but the other one really started to get some time in the American East playoffs, and it's cool to watch the Harlem kids watch that and see it. And so you're sort of like, you have the kind of aspirational component of like, okay, these are kids, some of them work for us now. You know, we have a number of alums. Dajay is a well-known alum. We just hired him. He played football and lacrosse at Bryant and was sort of like an early hero to many Harlem lacrosse kids. I remember a great photo of a bunch of kids going out to watch him play at Stony Brook when he was at Bryant, and like all these young Harlem lacrosse kids. Those kids are probably like in 12th grade now, and he's working as a program director at Harlem lacrosse. So they're seeing that, and they're kind of like, okay, the aspirational component, but also this infrastructure of all of the post-secondary options. They're just like, okay, there's a lot of options here. If I stay with this long enough, I've known somebody who's done X, I've known somebody who's done Y, gone to this kind of school, gone to that kind of, if I'm interested in HBCU, or I'm interested in, you know, my transcripts aren't that great, or I'm a really strong student, And I'm worried about college finance, like, but I don't know how I'm going to pay for college. That's something Harlem Lacrosse, Joel specifically supports a lot. So I think seeing the variety, you see kids stay with it longer and then kind of be like, okay, like I can take this a lot of places.
I think we covered a lot of ground. Murph, anything you want to add before we part ways? Let you get back to it.
No, again, very excited. For a long time, I've admired the mission and the process of Harlem Lacrosse, and now very much believe in the people, like Joel and certainly Mike and his leadership and Jenny and a million others. I met a bunch of them 2 weeks ago in New York. I think it's an unbelievable organization, and people out there, if they can contribute to it or become a part of it, I think they'll make the sport better and make our lives better being a part of this organization. So.
Mike, any final thoughts?
No, just grateful, and we feel very lucky to have Mike, and I hope that it's just worth highlighting that, the someone who's at the highest level of the game is choosing to take this step. I think is I'm very proud. It says a lot, I think, about our organization that we would attract him to do so. It's, of course, says a lot about Mike and the person that he is, but the work is important, and it plays a big role in the lives of our students and in the sport, as Mike says. And I think we just have a great opportunity to, leave the game a bit better than we found it by committing to this. So, really lucky to have Mike on board.
Well, thank you for joining and spending the time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Look forward to talking to you guys in a couple months, Mike, after you get your feet a little bit wetter and have a little bit more familiarity with the organization, and certainly heading into next summer when you have the opportunity to roll up your sleeves.
Thanks, Terry.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.